Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hi, everyone. This is Alan Shark. I'm the Executive Director of CompTIA's Public Technology Institute, and I'm happy to be with you today for another episode of Shark Bites, the podcast that deals with technology, technology leadership, focusing mostly on cities and counties across the United States, but we do kind of get into some other areas as well. We're very honored today to have Gary Bixler, who's the Vice President, actually Vice President, Global Member Communities. And it's interesting because I appeared on Gary's podcast a number of months ago, and I promised that I would reciprocate with gladness. And so Gary, welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the invite back the other direction, and I'm excited to be here. And I've enjoyed a lot of your podcasts. Your topics are fantastic, so I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, likewise. So, Gary, you know, one of the things I usually start in way of interviews is getting a sense of how you got to where you are. I mean, you've been on the outside. You've been on the faculty of CompTIA. You certainly are no stranger to CompTIA. Your role is somewhat new, perhaps, within the CompTIA family, being in the inside of the tent. And I'm going to guess that that you didn't go to school one day and say, you know, I want to be, you know, the vice president for global member communities when I grow up. And so I'm fascinated how we get to where we are these days. And every time I ask that question, I could make the podcast totally based on that, which we're not going to do, but share with us more of your background. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, happy to do that. So, and I think there's probably a couple of interesting nuggets in there, and I'll try to skip the non-interesting ones. But I'm, you know, sitting here chatting with you today from Austin, Texas, which is obviously a big, you know, state government hub. And so lots of government activity, lots of, you know, friends and family that are involved in the government work here. And I'm not quite a native Austinite. I was born in Dallas. But I've been here since first grade. So, and I've, you know, aged a lot since then. So I consider myself a native. There aren't many of us here anymore. Most people that are in Austin came to Austin either for the university, which is why my family landed here. My father moved from the Panhandle of Texas to Austin to go to the university, or the government, to work in the government. And a lot of those people, you know, stay. The third pillar, if you will, of the Austin economy is high tech. And so, you know, that started with IBM and some others, but more recently, you know, Tesla has just started building a new factory here in Austin. My son is actually working on part of that factory. And we've had Oracle just announced they're moving here. And so lots of high tech traffic into Austin. So I've grown up in Austin and, you know, started out, my first job will be interesting. My first job was working for the government of the state of Texas. I was hired in fourth grade to be a page in the Texas Senate. Now, the week that I started, they voted to cancel the page program. Now, fortunately, the office that I worked in and the senator that I worked for scrambled and they created this special position called special messenger. So there was about a dozen of us that got to stay on as a special messenger, which was essentially the same thing as a page, but not really well defined. It was ill enough defined that we basically just did whatever we wanted to do, including shooting spit wads through the vote tallying board behind the speaker, you know, out in the chamber and things of that nature. So I knew every nook and cranny of the Texas State Capitol building. Still have some very interesting pictures from on top of the star and in the top of the building where the lady is and all that kind of stuff. So that was my very first job, was in government, but then kind of progressed on a path that many of my family go down. We were engineers. We have a lot of engineers in our family. And I went to engineering school, graduated undergrad with a degree in computer science and electrical engineering, and started my life as an engineer. But as many engineers do, you get forced pretty early on in a technical career to choose between a technical track or a business track or a management track, if you will. And as much as I enjoyed the engineering work, I was kind of stuck in labs and not working with very many people. I'm a pretty social person. So I chose the management track. And very quickly, kind of moved through a variety of roles and ended up kind of specializing in what at the time was called field marketing, what we would call channels today. So I've spent the last 25 years of my career really in one way or the other around helping companies build technology channels, channels of partners that help them go to market with products or solutions. And that took me to a couple of companies. My longest stints was with AMD. AMD is a big semiconductor company, the primary competitor to Intel. Although interestingly, I saw a note from Intel this last year that said they're going to integrate AMD graphics into their microprocessors, which almost fell in my chair when I read that, because that's like dogs and cats living together. So yeah. Who knows? Anyway, but I left AMD and started my own consulting practice about 10 years ago. And the first call that I made was to a very good friend of mine, Nancy Hammervick, who is executive VP of CompTIA. And she had just moved to CompTIA. And I told her I'd love to get plugged in because I'd been kind of a client of CompTIA, a member of CompTIA, if you will, when I was at AMD. And so that started a journey, a 10-year journey of being a faculty member for CompTIA and delivering content, eventually becoming kind of a consulting partner with CompTIA and helping them develop some content like our channel account manager training and some of that training. And then, roll back to, just about a year ago in March of 2020, the famous 2020, hopefully in our rearview mirror now, Nancy called me and said that she had had one of her team members retire, and she wondered if I would be interested in becoming a part of the CompTIA family. And that led to me being able to join in the role that you introduced me as, leading our global communities. And I'm thrilled to be here. It's been such a cool experience to be a part of CompTIA for the last 10 years. And I've always, just admired the organization and the team and all that. And to be kind of now on the family side is pretty special. So really excited to be here.
Cool. And of course, I should add that both PTI and CompTIA SLED operations report through you. So it kind of expands this whole idea of communities in a real positive way. So I'd like to get a better sense of, for those less familiar, to talk a little bit about the communities that that you're overseeing and providing sure. leadership to.
Yeah, so Nancy Hammervick, my boss, our boss, as I mentioned, is responsible for all of our membership part of our organization. We have a big certifications arm as well in CompTIA, but on the membership side, there's several things we do for our members. And one of the main benefits of being a paid member of CompTIA is participation in our communities. And right now we have 8 of those communities defined, and those communities are organized. 3 of them are organized around kind of technology tracks. So we have a managed services community, and we have an IT security or cybersecurity community. And then we have an emerging technology community, and those names are descriptive enough. You can kind of tell where they're focused, but most of the people that are in those communities are in those businesses or at least interested in those businesses. And then we have another community organized really around social causes that is our advancing tech talent and diversity community, which really has a dual focus on workforce and workforce issues, and then also diversity issues. Obviously, that community has been very busy in the last 12 months with all that's gone on, both in the workforce area with COVID and all the the job openings and all that, and then obviously on the social justice side with the diversity community. So that community has been extremely active, and frankly, it's our largest community by number. So we have a very large contingent of people that are a part of that community. And then we also have 4 regionally based communities. So we have a large community in the United Kingdom, UK, and our youngest, smallest community in the Benelux region. And then a very nice community also in Canada and in Australia, New Zealand. So those are our 8 communities. Now, and those communities are really geared around fostering kind of dialogue and interaction and discussion, and then building initiatives. So they're responsible for driving initiatives and resources and tools that members of that community can utilize. So for instance, Canada is working on an initiative to help their members understand the some of the things that the government is doing to provide, you know, stipends and other things, grants and things that they can use to, you know, shore up their workforce during this time and things of that nature. Australia, New Zealand did a very similar campaign. So sometimes it's government focused, sometimes it's focused around technologies or technology areas. Our emerging technology community, for instance, produces our top 10 emerging technologies list every year, which is very popular. One of our more popular pieces of content that CompTIA produces. And there's, you know, tools like that that the and initiatives that the communities get involved with. So a lot of it with the communities is about meeting together, having those discussions, and then working jointly to create some of these tools and resources. Compare that to another group that I manage, which is our technology interest groups, abbreviated TIGs. And those are a little more for people that are interested in a particular technology. We have three of those. We have artificial intelligence interest group, a drone interest group, and then a women in technology interest group. And these are a little more one way in the sense that we provide a really nice vehicle for them to be able to learn about that area and to kind of, engage content. But then we also try to drive, you know, just discussions and learning and dialogue with them. It's not as much as the communities are about doing things and building initiatives and tools and resources. They don't really do that. It's really more of just getting them started and engaged in the dialogue and having the conversation. So that's kind of communities and TIGs. That's, you know, the world that I manage, in addition to what you mentioned with, you know, PTI, your group, and SLED, which I'm really excited about this year, being able to kind of cross those streams, if you will, a little bit. I think there's a ton of opportunity there.
So as we look ahead, I can't help but take advantage of the fact that you've set the stage for the vendor side. And now that you basically have under your span the public sector side in two key areas, which is vendors who are selling to state and local governments, right, and education. And then you have PTI that used to have that component. So you actually have a very interesting component of local government folks that are consumers of technology and are always looking for new solutions. And the latest figures that I've seen, and you and I talked about this earlier, is that the local government market alone is like $55 billion in 2020. So even if there was a slight shortfall of a few million here or there, or hold their own, we're talking about $5.5 billion. And yeah, these are private companies that are selling to governments, whether it be hardware, software, or services. What do you see as the prospects for, you know, on one hand, you have the TIGs, you have the communities, even on the global sense? I mean, I'm assuming that these folks must have at least a fascination of what's going on in the public sector, because this is new for CompTIA.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. And it's interesting that you point out kind of the different audiences and the way that this kind of dovetails, because it's true that on our communities, our members that are part of our communities are largely made up of vendors, as you pointed out, also distributors, smaller number of those because there's a smaller number in the world, but all the large distributors are members of CompTIA and participate in our communities. And then the solution providers that actually take the vendor solutions and provide them to, you know, end commercial customers or government customers. But those customers themselves, the government entities or the commercial entities or the enterprises, they're not really today a big part of our communities, okay? They're the end user piece. And that's what you address. And so being able to introduce, you know, those government entities to those vendors and even solution providers is a great opportunity. And you mentioned that, you know, the fascination certainly with our communities, with government. And I think, you know, many of them are very active in that space, but a lot of them look at it as they see that big number that you mentioned, you know, all the dollars, but then they also, they see a lot of kind of mystery and uncertainty around how to engage the business of government. And there's a lot of kind of fear and uncertainty around, you know, rules and regulations and how do you build these relationships and How do I get, you know, in the right place and all those things? So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us to work together to help kind of, you know, clear up a little of that mystery for them. And for those that are willing and interested, and there's certainly those that are capable, it could be a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, especially since we know what the spend is, we know what the general opportunity is. And the real question might be scale, because many of the folks that are in these communities are not necessarily from the largest communities, I mean, companies. And so right. The question becomes, you know, are there opportunities for them to kind of band together to possibly address RFPs that they would not do alone, which could be a really valuable service of CompTIA?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it's one that, you know, we always preach. And this goes back to my days as a faculty member, whenever I would talk to the, you know, the solution providers in particular, and we would talk about these skill gaps and things, and they want to participate in these larger business solutions, but they don't have all the skills or capabilities to do so. We would always encourage them that, you know, you don't have to do it all. You know, you can partner with someone that specializes in some of these things, and you can build a little coalition. And there's been a lot of success driven in our market by those that are willing to do that.
For those on the corporate side listening to this, I just want to agree with Gary. There is mysteries in the public sector market. Having spent most of my career kind of saddling that side of things, the good news is that once you're in, you usually are there for a long time, but it is a long sales cycle getting in.
Right. So, well, and this saying may exist in your world as well, but in the IT channel world, there's a famous saying that, you know, where there's mystery, there's margin. So if you can solve the mystery for your customers, there's money to be made.
So as we move into the new year, this is being recorded in the beginning of 2021, although for many of us doesn't feel that yet. How optimistic are you in the year ahead in terms of tech spending and addressing so many of the issues that you're dealing with today?
Yeah, well, I think the performance of our industry and our business in 2020 makes me very optimistic, because as it turns out, you know, the challenges that we've faced, tech is a big part of the solution. So it, while it's certainly true that some of our member companies didn't fare too well, the vast majority, you know, especially those, you know, I told you our communities are managed services, cybersecurity, and emerging technology. And all three of those are right in the middle of, you know, this move to remote workforces, you know, shoring up and securing connections for remote workforces, you know, applying emerging technologies like AI and some blockchains and some other things to the data and the communication and the applications. I mean, all those things have really, you know, accelerated. There's things that were already in motion that have been accelerated dramatically by the pandemic in particular. And so I think I'm very optimistic that as we move through this year and we, you know, cycle back to whatever normal becomes, technology is going to be in the middle of that. And our, you know, our opportunity is to help all of our member companies to, you know, understand how to best engage that and meet the needs that are emerging, you know, as that happens in our world.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's hardly a local government of medium size, at least, that doesn't have an interest or a presence in drone technology. And we're seeing more and more adoption of artificial intelligence. And the number one concern of every local government of every size is cybersecurity. And add that to the fact that because of strained budgets and possible reduction in some headcounts, my prediction is that many people are going to turn to managed services to help them augment, both through technology and through people, to leverage through economy of scales that a larger provider can provide in terms of cybersecurity protections, both from a monitoring standpoint as well as recovery standpoint. I share the optimism with you in terms of the role that we played, and the need hasn't gone away. If anything, the need that may have been, well, this is temporary, I think most people are recognizing, no, this is probably the new quote unquote normal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally agree. I think the opportunity is immense. And I think that the membership and the channel and the technology providers are are getting ready. I mean, I think they're figuring it out a little bit, but in general, I think, you know, there's an excitement about what this can be. And, you know, Nancy, our boss, talks often about, you know, we're going to come through this, you know, better and stronger than ever. And I think this industry as a whole and our, you know, kind of use of technology will be stronger from this. I mean, yeah. There's been, you know, we got knocked down, but I think it's going to be, you know, a strength going forward that we were able to accelerate some of these things that might have taken us 10 years, you know, to get to had this not happened. And now we're going to get there in, you know, 2 years maybe.
I agree. And CompTIA has done exceedingly well with certifications, professional development, and the need, like, we've got a network. We've got to figure out, you know, what this new technology landscape is going to look like. So let me shift a little bit to the global arena. You know, in your experience now, are you finding that we have more in common, less in common? Are there different issues that would be interesting to note?
Well, certainly, as I look at my global communities, there are differences, you know, geopolitically that we deal with in those regions. So, you know, every region has some form of, you know, government, you know, help to help people get through this pandemic, but those are all different and the rules are different and how it's, so a lot of those communities are focused on making sure the member companies understand those regulations. But when it comes to technology, I mean, those issues you described about the need to manage a remote workforce and the attraction of managed services and the threats of cybersecurity, those are universal. And those are in every region. And we are starting to see more just in the last 12 months, kind of collaboration across these communities. So for instance, our managed services community and our cybersecurity community have, you know, large initiatives that they're working on that they would normally build a set of subject matter experts to work on. And a lot of those historically would have all been from the US. Well, now those committees are made up and have members from the UK, from Belgium, from Australia. So we're starting to build a lot more kind of cross-regional, cross-community working groups and working teams. And that's really exciting because they have, you know, some different perspectives and some really unique kind of, you know, attributes that they bring to the table. So I'm excited about that.
So this is the year, this past year, 2020, was the year that we had a pivot towards a virtual environment. And many of the CompTIA programs where we had legendary receptions, legendary networking opportunities, you know, suddenly were converted into more of a Zoom environment. Yeah. Attendance was remarkably good in all this. So the idea that you have the global communities, we have all these different interest groups, how has the virtual environment actually helped get the word out and continue to bring people together?
Yeah, it has been interesting for sure. And I feel very fortunate to be a part of CompTIA where they were, you know, had the leadership and the foresight to really start preparing for this, you know, several years ago. So we were pretty well positioned when this hit to accelerate our transition to digital. And the communities did a great job. As you said, we've gotten great participation. We grew our communities this year in 2020. We actually grew by several thousand members, which is remarkable to me given the environment that we're in. So I think I've been excited about that. Now, and we've gotten a lot better at executing those virtual events. We've learned a lot. We've tried some things that didn't work great. We've tried some things that worked pretty well. And we're working on kind of, you know, combining those together. We're looking forward to our Communities and Councils Forum, our CCF event in March. Will be the middle of March. And, you know, Alan, you guys will be a part of that for the first time. I'm really excited about that. And, you know, that's going to be a virtual event again. And you'll get to see some of the things that we've worked on to try to make those compelling and interesting and still engaging for the audience. But with that said, let me also kind of forecast that CompTIA is absolutely committed to getting back together in person whenever we can. So I don't want anybody to get the impression that, okay, well, we're just all virtual now. We're going to do these, you know, Zoom meetings or whatever, you know, forever. We really feel like a big part of the value of our communities and the networking and the relationship building in that is, you know, much, much better in person. So I'm not sure we'll do as much in person as we did in the past, but we will do really great, in-person events, as you said, because we know we're really good at that. But I think they'll also be hybrid. I think we'll also find ways to include and allow people to participate in a digital kind of remote way. So we'll be able to do a little of both.
I fully agree. I think we're going to wind up taking the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Because there are real advantages to virtual. I mean, many of us may be, you know, meetinged out, virtualed out, zoomed out. But at the same time, you know, everyone's treated as an equal when it comes to video. we're all the right. same squares. There's no one sitting in the back. We can hear people better. We can see people better. We can see we can actually read the PowerPoints.
Right.
So, you know, my guess is that, yeah, that's going to be an option. And I see incredible opportunities for the global community and people in different time zones, those who, you know, are not ready to travel necessarily, or those who can't travel, because travel does take time. I'm all ready to have a drink with you and everyone else, but at the same time, there are people who would love to be there but can't. And this way, we'll be able to accommodate them. So I'm very optimistic that we have the tools in place to make 2021 and beyond a very exciting place.
Yep, absolutely agree with that.
Great. Well, is there any question that I didn't ask that you were prepared for? I think I've asked everything that I'm setting the stage. More about you, more about the plans. You're optimistic. Is there anything that you're particularly excited about that you'd like to share?
Well, I think we hit on everything, and I think it was a great conversation. I enjoyed it. I mean, to me, the most excited is just to find ways to cross these streams, as I said, and to really expose our communities to the opportunities in the public sector space. I think that's a tremendous opportunity this year. And I look forward to working with you to capitalize on it.
Great. Well, thank you, Gary. We've been listening and talking with Gary Bixler, who is VP Global Member Communities at CompTIA. And this has been a great conversation. We could have gone on, but to me, brief is good. And so I want to thank you so much for participating.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alan.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.